When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, it's welcome back to the Beaver Banter podcast. I'm Nick Dashlin, and I cover Oregon State football and basketball for the Oregonian and Oregon Live. The Beavers resume action this week after having a bye last Saturday. The Beavers head up to Seattle this week to play Washington at 7:30 p.m. Friday in Husky Stadium. Both teams are 6-2 with chances for a 10-win season, so the stakes are pretty high. Joining me on the podcast, as he does every week, is former Oregon State cornerback Kyle White. Welcome back, Kyle.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we're going to get to the Washington game in a bit, but since there wasn't a game last week, I thought we'd go in a little bit of a different direction to start the podcast. Want to just kind of go over each position group, Oregon State position group, and kind of talk a little bit about how they've fared this so far this season, maybe some ups and downs, maybe a guy or two that's really stood out, maybe even throw out a letter grade for each position. So thought I'd start with the offense start with the receivers and tight ends. I'll sort of lump them together, I guess. I think they pretty much delivered what we expected. I don't know that we expected them to be, this top of the Pac-12 group. They don't have that horse that you would say is a all Pac-12 receiver. Maybe Harrison was that guy, but that might have been a little bit of a stretch. I don't really know that they've overachieved this season. They missed Luke Musgrave. I mean, I think he was on a track to be all Pac-12 after two games, but doesn't look like he's going to be back this year. So that's been kind of a blow. Like I said, I don't know that anybody's severely overachieved. I think, Treshawn Harrison's been what we thought he'd be. I think Anthony Gould's had a pretty nice season. Jack Velling has been a pleasant surprise, a freshman tight end. I guess outside of some more explosive plays, I don't know if there's more we should expect out of this group. What do you think, Kyle?
No, I actually think you're pretty dead on the spot on this one. I think that, they do what they need to do to get through. There's nobody that really goes above and beyond and shows that greatness potential, but everybody is consistently decently good. So, I mean, there's nobody besides potentially Musgrave, and Harrison had the shot of being that all-star guy that we needed for the Pac-12 on our team, but doesn't show that consistency in the position. So, really, I think if you wanted to rate them a certain grade, I'd say maybe a C+, B-, just because it's they bring to the table what we need, but nothing more, nothing less.
Yeah, I mean, I guess one thing I should say is Harrison has won two games for him this year with last second play. So, I mean, there is that. He, that's not something a lot of receivers in the Pac-12 can say, is that they came through in the clutchest of clutch moments to win a football game. So, that there is that. I don't know. I'd probably give this group maybe a B-, C+, just based on what I thought they'd be at the start of the season. I don't want to say, they're a D because they haven't been all Pac-12 level. I don't think they were that group. So I don't know where would you grade them on this one?
Yeah, I agree. I believe that they're around a B-, C+, where it's I didn't have the expectations of us having a crazy strong receiving core, but I was really hoping not for some just horrible, and we got to just base the whole game off of the run. And so, we have that ability where we can throw the ball around. Do we have that go-to receiver in deep moments? Every once in a while, Harrison is that guy. So yes, it's cool, but he's not consistently that guy. It's sort of, he just gives you some random spark of I am here. And it's cool to see, but I wish he could just show it every game. Yeah. So, I agree. They're at a B-, C+, and I don't know. I think there's a lot of upside for the future. I mean, in the years coming, but at the time, I think it's just a growing process, and Jonathan Smith's doing a great job with that.
I do think for this team to, you know, maybe take another half step or so, the transfer portal, they've got to try to find somebody that's a real impact receiver. You know, and I don't know if that guy even exists out there, and I don't know how many, you know, I don't know how many bags of money you got to drop in the guy's lap to in NIL money to make it happen. But, you know, they desperately need an Isaiah Hodgins type that can go out and, you know, get you a catch on third and eight, almost a guaranteed, a guy that just go out. They just don't have any big receivers on this team. And, you know, maybe that guy won't exist in the transfer portal, but I do think that's one position group where, you know, Oregon State's probably got to really dig down deep and see if they can find somebody for next season, especially with Harrison leaving and Lindsay's leaving. you know, they're going to lose some guys off this roster. So let's see. Let's go to offensive line. Now, this is a group we thought was going to be pretty good going into the year. They had several returning starters. They had, you know, Brandon Kipper, a 5-year, he's in his sixth year, he's a 4-year starter. They had three returning, one or two or 3-year starters, and then Marco Brewer had experience at left guard. You know, Tali at Fuega is really, you know, he's really the rookie on this group. I think they've had a pretty decent season to date, but it's been mixed in that, I mean, they're solid run blockers again. There's no question. They do a good job at run blocking. This team has been improving each week with the run, but they could still be better in pass protection. The quarterback is, you know, it's constantly under fire. It's getting a little better. The penalties have gotten a little better. They've been a little bit better as the seasons wore on. But I kind of think for this group to be considered, you know, one of the best in the Pac-12, the pass protection's probably got to be better. I do think that of all the guys on this team, on this line, I think Tali, he's quietly had an all Pac-12 type season. I think that's sort of bearing out in some of the stats that you see in some of the analytic stats, that he's having a good season for a rookie, you know, right tackle. What's your thoughts on the offensive line?
The way I look at it, I think you took the words out of my mouth earlier when you said, like, they've gotten better week in and week out, where, like, you know, it started off a little bit more rocky than so. But as they've gone week by week, I see them getting better as a group, which that was the expectation to start off with. But at least they're getting there now. Yeah, like, the run blocking is always great. The quarterback's under duress a little too much. You know, when you have two quarterbacks, necessarily it's not on the O-line, but when you cause that much pressure on the quarterback, yeah, you're bound to throw an interception. Necessarily not six, but, you know, like, it happens. And it's hard as a quarterback to be able to read the field when you're under duress. So I think how they started off might have been a little bit weaker, but as they've progressed through the season, they've gotten a lot stronger. And I think they're starting to do well in both areas, more so run than they are pass. But I think the pass is just to come as the weeks go on, since we're on the back end of the stretch now.
I don't know how much video you've watched of these guys, but I know last year, you know, Nathan Eldridge was a center, and the coaches talked a lot about how he was really good at getting to the next level. You know, he got his first block in, and he was able to get to the linebackers, make another block. And they kind of wondered what would happen with, you know, with Eldridge gone. He was a 2-time all Pac-12 center, and he was very experienced. He played 7 years of college football, but Jake Levengood's had a nice season. I don't know that he's Nate Eldridge, I'm told he's been a real leader out there. And, you know, that's really what you got to have as a center is a leader and the block, you know, and be able to call out, you know, the things you need to call out on an offensive line. So that seemed to me the one area that going into the season that was a question mark, but Levengood's had a pretty nice little season so far.
Yeah. I mean, definitely coming from last year where we had BJ Baylor, and I don't know necessarily if I ever actually looked at the O-line, but when I'm able to see BJ get to the second and third level, it shows that your O-line is doing some great things. I mean, he's untouched for like a hot second, and then he only has to make one or two people miss. It's always a great sight to see. So I think that showed then. And then this year, you know, it does suck to be compared, but I think what they do well is communication, and they're doing better in other aspects. So sometimes when you're being compared, it's rather than trying to compare yourself in that one area, just try to outshine yourself in other areas and other aspects, so that like really help show who you are individually. And I think that that's what this O-line and this team's done.
Yeah. I'm gonna probably give this the offensive line a B grade through eight games, just because, you know, they run blocks so well, and so you can't take that away from them. You know, the pass protection, if it could get a little better, you know, maybe they're up to a B plus by the end of the year. That sound about grading them right here.
I want to say yes and no. Like, I would put them at a B because, like, the way I look at it, you know, we have a 6-2 record, partially on the O-line. They're doing great. We're running the ball decently well now. We've had a lot of great touchdowns, passing and running. So, yes, on that end. But at the same time, we've also had some slip-ups. You know, we've had a lot of bad penalties. So it's like I almost want to give them, like, a B-minus. But, you know, we've been in every game. We've done great more games than not besides the Utah game. So, like, yeah, a B is worthy and it's right. But at the same time, potentially a B-minus just from all the
– Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's somewhere in there. So let's go with the running backs. A lot of expectations here. So maybe these guys get graded a little harder than most just because the expectations. With Damian Martinez – I'm going to say it's a little mixed here because the expectations for him coming into the year were pretty high, and maybe they were unfair. I mean, he's now playing where we thought he'd be, and you know, it took him a little while to get here, and maybe that's what it is, and that's what we should have expected. But right now, I mean, eight games in, he's as close to dangerous a threat as a running back as there is in the Pac-12. So. There's that, and they've been able to go with these three guys, Sean Fenwick and, you know, Jam Griffin, and they've all contributed something, you know, to the mix. I kind of have a feeling that Martinez and Griffin are going to be playing a little bit more down the stretch, particularly if Fenwick isn't a little banged up. I don't know how, you know, where he's at health-wise. He missed the last game because of some issue. With this group, though, I would have liked to see what they could have done with Trey Lowe in the mix, because he's a real pass-catching threat, and that seems like the one thing they're sort of missing from the running backs. But, you know, overall, it's been a solid group. It's hard to complain. I just the expectations were so high with these guys that you know, anything less than great or close to great seems, you know, I guess average, I suppose. I don't know what have you seen from the running backs?
I see that side of the point where, like, yeah, their expectations were high, and I won't even lie, I'm keeping them that high because they have all that ability to do so. They have a great pass catching back at Lowe. They have a great breakaway runner with Martinez. It took time to get to, but he's there. You have a great yak yards with Griffin. You have a great boot back with Fenwick. So it's like you have all the dynamics, but I almost think that it's in so many different forms that it's like, who do you put in at times? And then how do they have to figure out who was what at the beginning of the season? So like, I almost give them, and I'm grading them on myself, like with as hard as standards as I've seen from my year to the next couple of years, all the way to them. I put them at like a C+, but with the potential of like a B+ to A-, because I mean, it's going to take time. They have the years. Like, only person that might leave is Fenwick, but I think that they have all the ability, and it's just taken eight games for them to get there. Martinez, I see him getting so many more carries now. I see Griffin getting the ball a lot more. I really was excited to see what Lowe would do with the ball on the outsides with like screen passes, just dishing it off to the side to him and like letting him go to work the way he feels. But when he comes back, we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
this year, next year. But I think it's just taken a lot of time for them to get that running game finally going. And I feel like they have it on pace of where they want it to be.
Right.
But we're 8 games in too.
Yeah, I think it's probably somewhere in the B to B minus, you know, but we're not through yet. They could get up as high as an A minus with this group by the end of the season, because Martinez is hitting his stride right now. And if he continues to improve, you know, this is going to be an exciting group to watch down the stretch. Quarterbacks, look, start with you, Kyle. What have you thought of the quarterback play so far?
It's really tricky because they have times of greatness and they have times of what are you even doing? So it's like you go from like a decently B+ rating to potentially a D rating. And so I'll split it right down the middle and just call it a C. It's just like you see moments of brightness and light and greatness and consistent play between either Nolan or the freshman. And, you know, it's just like, which one are we going to get this week? That's been the biggest talk. And who would you start now? And then, like, you know, you got Nolan throwing 6 interceptions. You got the freshman throwing 2 interceptions. But then he's also doing well. So it's like, you know, so as when we start getting that consistent play between just one, I think it's going to be great. I think that they both play pretty well. That's why I don't think, again, like, I feel like everybody's almost in that C+ category, because I don't think that neither one are bad. I think there's just been mistakes a little here or there. I think it's the only reason why we lost the 2 games is from just a couple of mistakes. But, you know, you win some, you lose some, you keep it pushing and you learn your lessons.
Yeah, I mean, the 2 losses, they had 8 interceptions. It's kind of hard to win with throwing that many interceptions, and not all of those are on the quarterback, but a fair number of more. I would say, you know, start with these guys. Was either one an all Pac-12 quarterback going into the season? No. Jonathan and, you know, Brian Lindgren, their first order of business is that these guys need to manage the game correctly. And I think from that standpoint, I think they've done pretty well. Jonathan's talked a lot about how they largely get Oregon State into the right run plays, which is sort of a thing that most fans don't see. Because why would they know that? But it's up to a quarterback to be able to read a defense and get them in the right run plays. And I think they've done that pretty well. The passing game could be a little better, but again, it comes back to what do you got to work with? I mean, if you don't have big, you know, stud receivers, I mean, there's only so much you can do. They've done well enough with those guys. But with both of them, especially Chance Nolan, he's just had a few moments that you just go, what are you doing? There's been like 1 or 2 of those in every game that you just go, what are you doing? And I mean, it's like you can almost see the interception before the ball even comes out of his hand. and it's those moments that just they make or break a quarterback. And you know, you'd like to think by now those moments are going to start. You know, maybe we'll see less of them down, but it's hard to know because Nolan's today was the first day he's practiced, I think, in a month. So I don't know where this position's going to go either. Cause you know, if Gulbranson plays Friday, well, Gulbranson's probably going to be the starter against Washington. I mean, if he starts and they beat the Huskies, I mean, he's 4-0 as a starter. Regardless of what you think of Chance Nolan, it's going to be hard to bench a guy that's 4-0. It just is. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens if Oregon State wins Saturday. I keep saying Saturday. It's Friday. Friday night, 7:30. Friday night, 7:30. You know, if he leads them to a win Friday night, I think you got to keep going with him because you can't bench a hot hand. And, you know, I'm not saying he's a hot hand, but when you're winning games, your quarterback's responsible for a lot of that. So I don't know. I'd say the quarterbacks overall have been I'm going to say about a C+. I mean, could be a little, especially with Chance, I think he could have maybe add a little bit more of a threat running the ball, but I don't know how much that's on him and how much of it's play design, how much Brian emphasizes that, but I'm going to say about a C+ in that neighborhood. I don't know. Is that about what you said C, right?
I said C to C plus. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm looking at how we graded these guys, the offense, and it was in the B to C range. And so, you know, some people might say, whoa, kind of harsh on these guys, but I'm thinking, okay, the offense isn't as good as last year. I mean, I think we can all agree on that. And last year's offense was probably one of the top four in the Pac-12. This one's probably, I don't know, sixth or seventh, maybe somewhere in that 7-6-7 range. I mean, it's kind of average, and I mean that's where you're at right now. Can they be a little better? I think they could, but you know we'll see how they are down the stretch. But I mean, at this point, I think, you know, it's been an average to maybe slightly above average offense just because of the running game.
Yeah. I mean, when you can't find a dynamic between the pass or the run game, it makes it hard. And I feel like we've been average on both sides of it. We don't have some deep threat, like some crazy great receivers or even a guy to really get the ball to. And then on top of our run game's taken some time to build all season so far. And now that we're finally there, I feel like, you know, potentially we could see our run game be our main focus that switches to our pass out of it. So a lot of play action or even just like fake to pops and just hoping that, you know, there's going to be so many more people ready to bite on the run where we'll have more open opportunities in the pass game. Yeah. So
yeah,
excited to see where that ends and where it leads to in the future. But yeah, no, I think across the board, yeah, if people wanted to say like, yeah, we're grading them harshly, I mean, you sort of look at it overall, and we're in the top 25, but we're out of like the top of the five of us, we're at the bottom of it. So I'd still put us, I mean, I'm proud of us 100,000%. But, you know, like they have great receivers on the other teams. They have a great offense. They have a mobile, like a really mobile quarterback. And, you know, we have deep above average players, but nowhere towards great offensive players yet. And I think it takes time. It takes recruitment. And we're Coach Smith has done great at doing this lately. I mean, the past couple of years literally prove it. We get a bowl game last year. We're already bowl eligible this year. We're top 25 since 2013. So, I mean, the years that Coach Smith has just put in the small amount of time already shows tremendous difference. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, let's go the other side of the ball on defense. The defensive line, you know, that's kind of a position where unless you spend a lot of time nerding out on video and really studying what guys are doing and everything, it's kind of hard to, you know, really know exactly how, you know, how they're all playing. But just from talking to coaches and what I've seen, I kind of think they've just been quietly effective. I mean, you're not going to defensive tackles and ends aren't going to rack up a bunch of stats and whatnot, but they're stopping the run. They could get to the quarterback a little bit more, but they're still, you know, they're still making some impact in that area. And this defensive line is way better than it was 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, they at least make some impact. I mean, they were getting shoved off the ball, you know, in 2018 and 2019. That's not happening anymore. And so from that standpoint, I mean, I don't know how much we expect out of the defensive line. I'm going to give them a B just because, you know, we don't talk about them. And when we're not talking about the defensive line, that's usually a good thing with Oregon State.
Yeah, no, I was actually going to say the same thing. I'm 100% giving them a B. When you talk about quarterback pressure, I think we've been decently well at getting to the quarterback. We stopped the run decently well all year so far. They do their job, they hold their gaps, and you know, like that causes so much on the back end, like we talked about way earlier this season, where it gives the DBs, the safeties, the linebackers enough time to cause turnovers. And what are we known for? I mean, like we're like the second best team for turnovers right now in the pack, second or third, but I think it all starts from the D-line, and they've held their own and they've done their job. And when they're able to do their job, and again, yes, it's a quiet position where it's just like, I mean, you're not seeing like any 50, 60 yards pop runs pop off every week, like every other play or every other couple drives, which is really nice. So, you know, when that's not happening, that means that they must be doing their job. So quarterback's been contained in the pocket more times than not. We're also having quarterback pressures, not as many sacks, but pressures are just as good as sacks sometimes when you're going to have them throw an unwanted ball and it throws it right to the DB. So,
yeah. So let's lump the outside inside linebackers together. I'm going to say they've been about what we thought they'd be. I don't know. We've seen any real standouts on the edge from the outside linebackers, but they've impacted the passer. You know, maybe not getting the outside linebackers. Maybe aren't getting the sack quite the number of sacks that, you know, a great outside linebacker core would have, but they've been effective. And John McCartan has really had a decent, better than average season. He bouncing back from missing all of last season. He's really been good this year. The inside linebackers, again, it's been just a nice solid group. Kyrie Fisher Morris has stepped into a starting role and he's really been a team leader. He's usually one of the, among their top two or three tacklers, and seems like he's in the middle of everything. Omar Spates has been a great leader, you know, 3-year starter, solid player. You know, Easton Macarenas Arnold is going to be a standout as soon as one of these two guys in front of him graduate. He's going to step right in and be pretty effective. I look at this group and I'm going B+ on the linebackers as a whole.
I mean, I'm probably just going to stick with a B, just because it's positive that you don't hear very much about them. It's also negative that you don't hear very much about them sometimes. So, you know, there hasn't been too many sacks lately, but at the same time, like, they play great ball. They get to the ball. They make the tackles. I think, yeah, like you're saying, like, all these older guys, I think they have great leadership. You know, they know the game. They know the team. They know how to manage it, and they lead the defense very well. So I think that the only thing, in my opinion, that's missing is, and I don't know, maybe it's my judgment on or bias in comparison on picking or always remembering Himeka as that linebacker. But in ways, he was a 1 out of 1,000 guy where he set some crazy stats in one season and then the next season didn't really do much. But I mean, I think we have the ability to get more turnovers, fumbles, or even getting sacks. And so I think that's the one thing that's really missing for me. I think that their overall play is well, just waiting for more sacks to happen and more fumbles. So,
yeah. But don't you think Hamakar's when he was racking up all those numbers, I mean, he was a home run type guy. I mean, he either made the great play or he missed a lot of plays. So, I mean, as good as he was, I mean, he could also, maybe they don't get the sacks that he got or, but they don't miss a lot of, just whiff on guys running by them on run plays and things like that. I don't know.
No, I totally agree. No, I agree on that. And I think that's the thing is that in some ways I could be like mistreated and only remember like all the great plays that Himeka had and then forget the whole next season that he didn't do well at all.
Yeah.
So, I think, again, like they play consistent and they play well. I still think that they have the ability to like have a sack, a couple sacks, like 2 sacks per game.
Yeah.
A fumble, like not even, you don't have to like turn over the fumble, just a fumble. It changes the momentum. It changes the animosity in the crowd and in the stadium. And I think they have all this potential. It's just not been fully awoken this year.
Yeah, there's really not a like on this team, there really isn't a guy that's, you know, piling up a bunch of sacks. They have, well, they got 6, 9, 11 guys that have been involved in a sack this year, which is a pretty high number. But I mean, their leading sacker is a safety. There's only two guys that have more than that have two sacks or more, and so but again, if you're impacting the stat that doesn't show up a lot is, you know, what are you doing? How are you impacting the quarterback? If you don't have to sack a guy if you make him throw when he doesn't want to throw. And I think like John McCartan, he's only got one sack, but he's got five quarterback hurries. So, you know, that's not a sack, but I'm sure out of those five, you know, maybe there's probably not a lot of good happen for the offense on those plays. And, you know, Corey Stover is another one, an outside linebacker. He's got five quarterback hurries, and Riley Sharp has four. So, you know, there's that. So I think they've been a nice solid group I'm going to give them a B to this point.
I also think, and I just thought about this, when I think of a defense, I think of a different kind of breed, like a different kind of animal, like the most confident, swaggiest kind of guys on the field that are ready to make plays. And when you look at our defense, I don't really see it or feel it as much. I feel consistency in the linebacker position, and I feel consistency in the D-line. But I don't feel that, like, overconfident player in either one of those. But when you look at, and I know that you're probably going to go into the DBs next, so I might as well just flip it over there. But when you think of the DBs, you think of guys that are overly confident like no other, but they back it more times than not. They come in, they hit hard, they come in, they make plays, and they let everybody know that it's their field. And I respect that so much, where it's like, and so I'm grading our defense, our DBs, at a B+ to A-, because they come in with a different kind of energy, but that energy that's needed for the defense to work the way it does.
Yeah. I don't really know what you can, you know, say about the secondary that, you know, it's been great. I mean, it's either Utah or Oregon State in terms of best secondary in the Pac-12. And, you know, Utah's got Clark Phillips. So he always sticks out because of all the interceptions he's made. But I mean, Oregon State, their pass efficiency defense is number one in the conference, number 14, you know, nationally. They're right up there in total defense. Oregon State's second in the conference. And, you know, and a lot of it has to do with the secondary. I mean, they just make so many plays. I mean, it's not just the corners either. It's the, you know, Oladapo leads the you know, the Beavers in sacks and tackles this year. He's got he's broken up five passes, and you know, they just have, you know, Alex Austin's broken up seven passes, and Rajon Wright six. Ryan Cooper, who wasn't even on the team last year, he's been a pleasant surprise this year. He's become a starter early in the year, and he leads the team with three interceptions. But they've got five, six, seven guys back there that are pretty nice players. And I'm looking at guys that can make the all Pac-12 team. And when I say make the team, I mean, some are either first team, second team, or honorable mention. I mean, I got to think Oladapo is going to be on there. Jaden Grant's going to be on there. Alex Austin, Rajon Wright. I mean, Ryan Cooper's got a shot. I mean, I think they got a shot to get five guys somewhere on the all Pac-12 team. I don't know if this is the best secondary in the Pac-12, but it's one of the best too. They make a lot of plays, and that they're the reason this team, they are the number one reason this team's 6-2, I think.
I agree. And I think it's the energy they bring, the intelligence they have behind their positions, the communication on how well they are, the confidence that they bring, the swagger that they bring. They come in and they hit hard, and they come in and make plays. And I mean, I respect every part of their game. And I think they're a big reason on why the defense works and runs as smoothly as it does.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna say A minus on the. You said B. Is that what you said? I can't remember.
No, I said A minus to B.
Oh, okay,
plus.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, yeah. So and overall, I mean, I think we went B on the defensive line. You know, B ish on the linebackers and A minus on. So I mean, we're talking about a probably A minus to B plus on the defense, which is. It's the strength of the team is the defense. And so they're probably going to grade out a little hard, you know, a little higher than the offense, and that's okay. I mean, I think I think at this point, we look at this team and say, you know, this offense could be a little better. And if the defense can just stay as consistent as they've been, there's a chance to still win three or four more games this regular season.
I agree.
Let's kind of wrap up here with Friday's game up in Seattle at Husky Stadium. I was looking at the matchups over the years. This is the biggest game between these two schools since 2000. And that was the year both teams finished in the top 10 nationally, shared the conference title. Tremendous game. I mean, it was 33-30. I was there. It was everything you'd want in a football game. Nighttime, came down to, you know, last minute, they traded leads back and forth. It was as good a football game as you could have hoped for. So 22 years later, you know, it's not quite at that level, but both teams are 6-2 with chances to get to 10 wins at some point if they can get on a November roll here. Which year did you play in Husky Stadium when you were with Oregon State?
I believe it was my junior year. I played at Husky Stadium.
Yeah. What do you remember anything about playing at Husky Stadium? Anything,
Do I remember? That's like the second hardest stadium to play in the Pac-12. the crowd is.
Please don't say Autzen Stadium is the hardest stadium to play in. I've had this debate.
It's not the hardest. It's annoying.
I've had this argument with people because I've covered football for years and years, and I've always thought when Husky Stadium is full, that's as tough a place.
It's crazy.
The old place was a little tougher to play in than the new one, but still, I mean, when it's packed and their team is good, that is one hard place to play. Yeah, it was 2016. You played up there, a nice little 41-17 game, looks like.
Yep. Yeah. No, the stadium was crazy. I think fans are absolutely bonkers, but at the same time, love their team. So. They're very passionate about that. They'll talk a lot of trash to you just as much as the players will. So I think it's a great, it's going to be a great game for Oregon State to really show who they are and what they become. They have a lot to prove, and I think it's the perfect place to do it.
I mean, I look at this game and it's not a stretch to say if Oregon State wins, it's their biggest win of the year. They beat the Huskies. They're going to beat a 6-2 team on the road to get to 7-2 to open up November with winnable games against California and Arizona State. You win that game Friday night, you're probably getting to the Oregon game 9-2. So that's a big win if Oregon State can pull it off. And the difference really is going to be who wins the battle between Oregon State's defense and Washington's offense, because Michael Penix Jr. he's something special, and their receiving corps is pretty deep and productive. And Oregon State's defense is going to have its hands full with that offense.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a rough game the whole way through, and they just got to buckle down the whole time. It's going to be Oregon State's defense, Washington's offense, and the mind game of Oregon State's offense to itself. So I think that's the only way that our offense loses the battle between their defense and our offense. I think our defense is going to be the main holder. They're going to be the main piece to play.
And the other issue, there was two things I was going to ask. One was, so when you're playing against a quarterback that's really accurate and he doesn't run. He doesn't run a lot. He'll move, but he doesn't run a lot. How do you defend a guy like that? That's got a good receiving core and he's accurate. How do you defend a guy like that?
One thing you could do is look for tendencies. So that was a big thing that we used to do when we played like the Cows quarterback or Washington's with Brown when he was at Washington or Sam Darnold when he was at USC. We looked for tendencies. With accuracy and being just such a pocket quarterback, you don't really want to move, but you need to know precision, timing. Those are all very important keys. You look at a defense, you look at schemes, you're giving receivers exact concepts or exact routes to run. So you throw like little flashes here and there of hand signals. So being able to pick up on hand signals are really important as a DB. Being able to pick up on certain formations that he only runs certain route concepts out of. So like basically if he goes to a 3-by-1, sometimes some quarterbacks only run rollouts out of that. So it gives you a percentage of 26% that more times than not, he's going to run a rollout. If it's to the boundary, if it's to the field, that gives you a smaller percentage. So being able to know the tendencies, what to expect at certain down distances, it always helps. And then knowing his go-to players. So you have more understanding and awareness of the ball is definitely coming my way. So you should be on high alert. I think our DBs are very intelligent and they're probably, and I love that we got a week to analyze and watch film on it. And then on top of that, an extra week now to really, really prepare and dive in on it, because I think that gives them all the time in the world to really watch every cue that he makes. And I think they have a shot at this. They just have to be able to buckle down and be smart and really read all keys on the field.
I mean, the other factor in this game is going to be whether Oregon State can block their edges, the Washington's edges. They have more sacks than any team in the conference, and they can get after the quarterback. If they can, I think Oregon State can run on these guys. Washington hasn't seen an offense quite like Oregon State's that wants to run. So I think that's going to be a challenge for the Huskies, but it's going to be tough for Oregon State to keep their quarterback upright with their edge pressure. So I don't know what, I mean, outside of the obvious, the tackles better have a good game. Is there something else you would want to see to keep those guys from putting too much heat on the quarterback?
I mean, it's really going to be, if we're not running the ball, almost in ways, we're going to have Martinez or Griffin help block extra tight end, which also causes less receivers downfield, which that makes things hard. So I actually, truthfully honest, I'm very curious to see how Jonathan Smith takes this game and how he tries to counter the edges on how he's going to be able to help to save more time in the pocket, but on top of having the ability to get downfield. And I mean, if you know, like we all know Jonathan Smith, he's going to have a trick play up his sleeve. So hopefully he starts off with that with just a little bit of confidence to boost.
I mean, it seems like the key to the whole thing is Oregon State's got to be productive on first and second down. They can't, if they get in third and four, third and three, they're going to do well. If they got to get in third and eight, nine, 10, it's going to be a long night. So, you know, we'll see how they fare on those first two downs on offense. I picked the game earlier today and on the website. I picked it Oregon State 30, Washington 27. I'm not going to say I got a ton of conviction with that, but I do. I just think Oregon State, the fact that they've had a little bit extra time to study Washington's offense and defense being the strength of this team, I think that's going to be the difference.
I see it being 31-24 Washington.
I could see it either way. I'm thinking is, you know, Washington could easily win the game. Oregon State could easily win the game. I just think where I'm coming from is just, I just think the defense is going to have an edge with an extra week to prepare for Washington's offense. So,
yeah, it's always very tricky because I could see Oregon State just pulling away with it, like how they played with Washington State and they just came in and won.
Yeah.
But then you also have that Oregon State let's play to the level of our team, of our opponent.
Right.
So, you know, I think that it's a hump that they're getting over and it's a maturity level, and I think they're starting to get there, but at the same time, it's not fully there yet. And, you know, it takes time. I'm proud of them, and I think,
right,
yeah, they have every potential to win this game.
Right.
You just got to come out and do it.
All right. Well, I think that's I think we've entertained the masses long enough here. That's all the time we got for this week of the Beaver Banter podcast. You can find this podcast wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Be sure to check out Oregon Live for all our Oregon State content. We'll be back next week to talk about Oregon State's next game, which will be a Saturday, November 12th game against California in Reser Stadium. There's not a kick time on that one yet. This game was put into the 6-day window, so Sunday we'll know when that game kicks off. But we'll also be talking, obviously, about the Oregon State aftermath and, you know, what that means for the final three games of the season. So we'll see you next week.